This week on the Inside Flap.
I was writing about things that obviously I hope I will never go through myself, and we all kind of hope we'll never go through ourselves, but there is something about sort of exploring it through writing that is sort of takes away the, you know, helps you to kind of navigate the fear about that.
And
so, there, you know, that sort of therapeutic part of kind of working through it, I found, a little more therapeutic than kind of like difficult, just because they're fears and anxieties that we all have as mothers.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this Inside Chat edition. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right today is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Switched it up.
Oh, sheer laziness, Dave.
Came down to the basement, saw the microphone on this side of the table, and decided to just, go ahead and leave it there.
I didn't feel like dragging it around. There's cords involved, and then we have author interviews this week, and I thought, I have to bring it back to the other side of the table.
That's right. A little behind the scenes when we do our interviews. Laura sits
I'm in Andrew's spot.
Right. And she slides over so the author can see us on the camera on the old MacBook.
That's
right. And then when we do the podcast, she sits over here to my left. So you might be able to, if something sounds a little bit different, a little bit off, that's what's going on. You can blame Laura Medicus for that. Anyway, welcome to
The Inside Flap.
Happy to have you with us today for this Inside Chat. We're joined by Ashley Aldrain. Had a great conversation with her. Her new book is called The Push. And you'll get to hear me make a terrible joke about how we are out there doing the push, making the push for the push.
I know. And she's so polite and she laughed.
Then you called me out on it and everybody rolled their eyes at me. So that was awesome. We are sponsored today by IndieBound. Make sure you are doing your book buying at and supporting independent booksellers everywhere by going to IndieBound.org, or actually, if you go to our website, theinsideflap.com, you can click on the IndieBound link, help support us as well as independent booksellers and everywhere. So thanks once again for joining us here on
the Inside Flap
Inside Chat Edition. We'll have that conversation with Audrey in just 1 second, but first, hashtag but first, want to give you guys, I know you all out there are just waiting, with bated breath for yet another update on our addition, the North Wing, as we're calling it. We still don't have a name. The
right now it's the pit.
To our little it's just the pit right now. For any of you Parks and Rec fans out there, it's a pit. It's a big old pit. And what I thought was funny is that, so we had, well, Laura, why don't you tell, because I know we were scheduled to have the inspector who had slapped the old stop work.
Yeah.
Order on our front door to come back out.
Yes.
After Oscar came out, did some work to get the
erosion control
under control, if I can say that, to get that taken care of with the silt fences and the put up an orange fence around the tree. Pine straw everywhere.
Pine straw rolls.
Little rolls of pine straw that go all throughout the backyard to help with in case for that, you know, because here in Colorado
it
we
rains
get
all the time.
So many massive rainstorms,
especially in January and February.
It's just the worst. I mean, every time you turn around, we have a huge rainstorm.
Yeah. It doesn't ever snow.
We had to make sure to get those rolls of pine straw out. But anyway, the inspector was going to come by.
I have never seen it rain that hard to need anything like that. Like, I'd like to see it rain. We could use the rain.
We could anytime use the rain.
Yeah.
Certainly, we're not getting it out here.
If there's any type of moisture in our state, it's going to be snow.
Right.
That's it. Like, it doesn't rain very much here at all.
But no, city of Littleton, let's make sure we got all the pine straw down, the silt fences up for that 100-year rain that could come at any day here in January.
Yeah.
When it never ends.
No.
But anyway, so
yeah, so
I was scheduled to come to take a look.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I hadn't met the guy, but you had met him before, so it was my turn. Mm-hmm. And so I run out and meet the guy. And the first thing he says to me as we're standing there looking at the pit is, oh, he didn't move that dirt at all. So part of the thing is he had wanted this dirt.
Yeah.
Because Oscar
had piled up all the dirt that he...
If you have a pit, there's dirt that comes out of the pit.
Yeah. And he was concerned with the massive piles of dirt.
He didn't care for the dirt sitting there next to the pit, even though we could have used that dirt, but we needed to haul it out.
Yes.
So
which is
he's
exactly
like, oh,
what Oscar did.
Yes.
The other day had a dump truck come. The dump truck must have taken four loads of dirt out of here, leaving a small pile in the area. Yeah. And I was there when Oscar told the inspector, he said, we're just going to leave a little dirt here because we need some for backfill once the foundation goes up. And the inspector, oh, sure, no problem, no problem.
Yeah.
But that's his first word to you.
His very first words were,
and literally,
doesn't look like any dirt has been taken from here.
1/10 of the amount of dirt that was there still remained. And yet, as far as their naked eye could see, it was still his naked eye could see.
Just
it's
one
still,
guy.
It's still piles and piles.
Yeah,
and
so
what was your response to that?
Well, I tweaked my head. So that's how fast head turned and swiveled towards him.
Now I understand why you've been complaining.
I spun my head to the right.
Complaining about that neck pain.
I don't
know.
It was this. It was, of all the things that I thought he would, it's always that way, isn't it? The things you think someone's going to complain to you about
I do have audio of you turning your neck around. It was really something to say.
Yeah, so it is. It was the very last thing that I ever thought anyone would say. So my head jerked back, and I am quite a bit older than the inspector. I don't consider myself that old, but...
No, and you certainly are not.
He is very young, and so I had kind of admonished him in a way that...
You shake your head disappointingly?
I feel like older women... Now I know what it feels like to be an older woman who admonishes younger men.
How did it feel?
Felt great. And he took it. He took it like a man. So it was fine. It was fine.
I guess that's the important thing.
Yeah, but I did. I admonished him in a way that probably my ancestresses have admonished younger people.
Did you wag your finger at him and yell, shame, shame?
No, because it was cold, so I had my hands in my pockets. I'm not about the shaming, Dave. Shaming. No. If you want to evince change, you don't ever shame. Never shame.
I explained. When Betsy DeVos came out here, I think it was when she got hired appointed as our Secretary of Education, she came out to the very first school she came out to, and they were picketing around front, so she went out the back. Some teacher knew she was going to do that. I saw the video on YouTube.
Funny.
I was pumping my fist. It was the greatest thing. This was 4 years ago, but it was the greatest thing ever. And as she's walking into the back door, being escorted in by an AP or something like that, he's just standing there going, shame! 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 It was the greatest thing. And I just want to be that guy.
Oh,
I want to
do that
to somebody.
That's
justifiably.
So you know the part about shame that is confusing is that they tell you
whether or not you should direct it at yourself.
No. Oh, okay. Here's the part about shame that confuses me.
What is it?
I have read numerous accounts. Shame does not work. So you should never use it on your teenager or your child. You should never, ever use it anybody.
Yes, as a teacher, they do teach us
it
that.
It does
work. Don't call out a student in front of their classmates.
It even has the opposite effect.
It has the opposite effect.
However, shame feels really good.
It feels so good. Shame somebody.
So why does it feel so good?
I don't
good?
Know. I do it all the
so
time.
It feels so empowering.
When I'm out for a run and I see somebody who maybe it looks like they're going to cut me off, or sometimes when bikers cut too close and they kind of come around me on the bike path, I always throw my I will throw up my arms can you believe this guy?
That's funny. I just had people threw their arms up at me.
At you?
Yes.
What? You're not on a bike. You're
no,
walking.
But there was a guy on a bike.
Oh,
a
bike. Oh, I see.
I was in the car And okay. I think he was throwing his hands up at me as a driver, but I don't know. He could have been throwing his hands up at the bicyclist.
Some of the biggest shamers out there are bikers out here in Colorado.
No, it wasn't the cyclist. It was the jerk in the Mercedes SUV was trying to get around the cyclist.
Yeah. I
gotcha. But I think he was angry at me because I didn't turn quick. I have no idea. But I immediately, when he raised his hands in anger at me,
he was
like shaking his head, and he had that smile, that weird smile they do.
They're just looking for eye contact.
It probably was directed like at me, like, can you believe this cyclist daring
to
ride
on our road? I'm sure that it was, yeah. That's what I do. I do that same thing.
But I took it immediately because, you know, I'm like a kick dog or something. So I was like, oh, I've done something wrong.
You're quick to believe that you've done something wrong.
And I immediately got that shame hot feeling on my face.
The shame flash. You don't want to get the shame flash.
It hit me. And then I was a little like driving through this very wealthy neighborhood in Denver.
I
felt... For whatever reason, instead of
I'm on CCTV, they got me.
Instead of like reflecting on like, oh, it's probably the cyclist. I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. My initial thought was, he's a rich jerk. He has too much money. And I immediately went to the money angle when I don't know, you know, who knows, whatever. Maybe he earned that Mercedes money.
Maybe he deserves the shame.
Maybe he wanted a Mercedes SUV his whole life and finally was able to afford
one. Got one. Now he gets to cut off bikers everywhere. Well, I'll tell you who should not be shamed, and that is Ashley Audrain. Her new book is The Push. It is outstanding. Laura, you read this book. Tell us a little bit about it before we go to our little chat with Audrey.
Yeah, so this is a dark psychological drama. You might call it a thriller.
You might.
I think it's more of a dark psychological drama.
Okay.
But it's a page-turner, so... it's not a slow book at all. And this is about motherhood. Blythe Connor is the name of the narrator, and she believes that her daughter is a sociopath, basically. So that her daughter, there's something wrong with her daughter.
As a mother to believe about your daughter.
She's unable to connect with her, even as an infant. She alternates between wondering what's wrong with herself as a mother, and then she also wonders what's wrong with her daughter. And she seems to know something at her core that there is something wrong with her daughter. Her husband thinks their daughter is fine. And as a reader, you alternate between wondering if Blythe is suffering from, because I thought this, maybe from postpartum psychosis or something like this.
Yeah.
Or if there really is something off about her daughter, because there's other chapters where I'm like, no, there's something wrong with this little girl. And then you question yourself and blah, 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 you know, on and on. This is a tough book to read, but it's also a very good book. It's hard to put down the subject matter. There's quite a bit of child abuse. There's also intense grief. It's tough, but Ashley's writing is absolutely superb. I had tears in my eyes while reading parts of this. It's a gut-wrenching read, especially if you're a mother. I think I told Ashley that she'll hear me, but listen,
right,
if you are pregnant with your first, or you maybe have a cute little newborn out there,
just wait a few months
and then pick it up.
Yeah.
It's a tough read. Highly recommend this though. Good Morning America picked this as their January Book Club of the Month. And it's a great book for something like this because there is a lot to discuss in here. And people will feel strongly about it. And it should be a real fun one to talk about rather than one of those like, I don't know how I felt about it.
Right.
You'll have some feelings about it.
Yeah, this is one where I knew you were reading an exciting book.
Yes.
I heard lots of one-sided conversations.
I love to talk to
as
myself.
As you were talking to the book as you were reading it.
So I talk to myself when I read books and I talk out loud.
Yeah.
And so just this afternoon, we had the Nuggets game on and I heard Dave Medicus himself talking to himself.
Yeah, boy. That's right. So I always make fun of you for talking to yourself as you're reading the
book. And you did it in a way exactly what I do when I read, where it's a mumble, but I'm clearly speaking, but it's not directed at anyone but myself. Yeah.
It was Gary. Oh, Gary. It's the one you heard. There was lots of talking, but it was Gary. It was a little embarrassing.
It was embarrassing.
Nobody was recording me.
I know. I talk all
about
the time.
Shame. You talk about shame.
Yeah. Oh, I read recently people who are single.
Yeah.
They talk to themselves all the time. Is what it said. Yeah. And we're not single.
Yeah.
But I think the older you get, the more perhaps you talk to yourself.
I think people watching sporting events talk a lot. People reading a good book, they're going to talk a lot. So I think we're well founded.
I don't think most people talk to themselves out loud when they read books.
Listen, I was trying to help you.
Sporting events, I think they do.
I was just trying to help you.
Reading,
out.
I don't think they do. I'd like that. But if you're out there and you do that, please let me know. But I'm not alone.
All right, well, let's get to it. Time for our conversation with Ashley Audrain, all about her new book, The Push.
Mama's gonna make all of your nightmares come true. Mama's gonna put all of her fears into you. Mama's gonna keep you right here under her wing. She won't let you fly.
Well, thanks for joining us. We love your book, The Push. The Push. Actually, this is the today is the push for the push. How about that? and also, I just found out.
It's like the fifth time she's heard that today.
I know. So. I appreciate the laughter. It just, all right. It's not like I wrote it down or anything. It just popped in my head.
That's true.
But listen to this. I just found out, very exciting for you. Your book was amongst all the many excitement that's happened for your book, but now it's being selected as the GMA Book of the Month pick for January. That's awesome. Just another little feather in your cap for you.
It's amazing. Totally surprised. I was totally surprised when they told me, and just so grateful. These book clubs, these bigger book clubs, really make such a difference now.
Yes.
These books and just helping readers to discover. And so I think as a an author, you sort of quietly sort of hope and pray that somebody will pick it, but you do not expect it. I was thrilled that Good Morning America chose it.
So exciting, yeah. And so Ashley, I rocked back and forth and I talked to myself while I read your book.
It was a joy to listen to.
It's absolutely incredible. And when I finished the book, I just sat on the couch staring into nothing. I think I might have said some stuff to you, Dave, but I don't know what I said.
Yep. And I had to put a little mirror underneath your nose to make sure you were still breathing in that comatose state.
Oh, and I read it on the Kindle and I was like, there's got to be more here. I'm taking my finger and swiping, right. And, there wasn't anything else.
I'm sorry about that. Oh, no. It's a bit of a banger.
It killed me. So this is a dark, it's introspective. It's also incredibly heartbreaking about motherhood. It's beautifully written. I was blown away by your writing. What inspired you to write this?
Thank you. I had always been really interested in motherhood. As a concept, almost why certain women decide to become mothers, how it changes them, how it, changes their identity, their life. And also I had always sort of been interested in sort of like reading and watching, shows or movies about when things didn't go like they were supposed to for mothers. That was sort of long before I became a mother myself. And then when I did become a mom, my son had some health complications after he was born, and that had us spending, a lot of time in the children's hospital. Mm-hmm. And sort of, learning to mother, in a context that I had not expected at all. And that was quite challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really made me think a lot in those months, just about that idea of expectation, that we're sort of taught by society. And we sort of learn even as young girls that, motherhood is going to feel a certain way, that it's going to look, a certain way, and that, we don't leave a lot of room for experiences that are outside of that. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to write about that. I wanted to write about a mother who was going through, a motherhood that she had, never wanted to have, and what that would be like. As you mentioned, the book is dark and it sort of goes to some, dark places that thankfully a lot darker than my experience ever was.
It does make you wonder as a reader. Yeah.
Sure. I feel like everyone wants to say to me, who's your mother? Like, are you?
Yeah. It really, I was like, are you okay, Ashley?
I am.
Okay, good.
But I feel like I do need to clarify that in most interviews. But I did. It really was. I think there's a lot of fear attached to motherhood, mm-hmm. and I've always sort of seen fear and motherhood as almost hard to separate as love and motherhood is. It's just a part of it, and we worry about the dangers that could, our children could get in, and, we worry about everything as parents. And so, I think this book explores those fears. And I think in a way it was probably a way of me exploring my own fears and anxieties. It was almost, sort of a therapeutic way to kind mm-hmm. of face some of that, which I think is probably what readers kind of get from these books as well, these kinds of books. That's kind of where it all kind of started and where it came from and sort of why I wanted to kind of go down this route with the book.
That's interesting. Because you show us Blythe's mother's experience as a mother and her mother's experience. And I found it almost like I felt a sense of shame almost reading it because it was from the point of view of the daughters. But your book, of course, is from the point of view of Blythe as a mother. So it was interesting to have that. And just the abuse and the loneliness that these daughters experience. It was really just tough to read as a parent myself. Did you write a lot of her family history? And also, I feel like I know, but I would love to hear why you felt it was important to share, their history.
Yeah. So really, I started writing just about Blythe, and it was very sort of narrow at first on her experience. But I quickly realized, I think especially when I was going through revisions, I realized how important it was. We couldn't really understand Blythe without understanding the women that she came from and the experience of the generations before her, which I think is like a lot of us, like a lot of people, we do, whether we sort of, are conscious of it or aware of it or not. I mean, we all kind of carry things from the generations that came before us.
Yeah.
Sometimes we kind of talk about that maybe later in our adult life or maybe mm-hmm. never, but we don't often know about it when we're young, I would say. That it did become important to me to kind of explore those two roots. I was very interested as I kind of went along about this sort of idea of this kind of chain of mothers that, and just this idea that, when we're mothering, how much of what we're doing is learned mm-hmm. and how much of what we're doing is just in us, like just totally innate to being a mother. Like mm-hmm. there's, we know that, based on science and, hormones and everything mm-hmm. that, it is instinctual. There's a lot of mothering that is instinctual, but not for everybody. And for everybody experiences that to different degrees. And so I love the idea of kind of exploring that intersection of kind of the learned and sort of the innate and sort of how that comes out in motherhood. So that's sort of why I went back kind of two generations of women to tell that story.
It really added a lot to the story. And I loved that it was from the daughters and it wasn't that mom's point of view, because it really just helped. For me, I know I questioned Blythe a lot, and I don't know if I was supposed to, but I did. I think a lot of people probably logically would. So it really made me like, is her daughter going to grow up and write something about her mom in this way or think about her mom in this way? It was great. There's a line that jumped out to me in the book, and it was just a small moment. And it was, a mother's heart breaks in a million ways in her lifetime. So you might not, but it was in the coffee shop and she was listening to a stranger talk. And so it was so sad to me to read that line. And I was wondering, do you feel this to be true some days, or do you think it was Blythe's sadness just projecting onto this stranger?
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that line. Yeah. I really liked writing that line. Like I enjoyed that scene a lot.
I stopped and wrote it down and then like calmed my tears.
Thank you.
It's all true.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the tears though, but thank
you. No, it's okay.
You're not. You should not. She's not. No. She's definitely not. She's like, yes.
It was the first tears I cried in 2021. So thanks. Thanks so much, Ashley.
Thanks for continuing the misery of 2020. Appreciate it. Good looking out. Mm-hmm.
Funny. I do think that there's truth to that. I do. And I think you know, some of those million heartbreaks are bigger than others, yeah. I would say. And I think that's what I was trying to get at with that line is that, you know, you're so vulnerable as a mother. I mean, it's the most vulnerable part of me as a mother anyways. And it's, you know, it does feel like your heart breaks a million ways, as a mother. And again, some of those are, you know, the big, traumatic, terrible heartbreaks that, mm-hmm. you know, some women have to go through and we all hope we never do. But then there are also those tiny little heartbreaks along the way. And I think, you know, I have two kids that are 5 and 3, so I've only been in this motherhood game for 5 years, but, but you know, even in those 5 years, you know, I can see them. I can see those tiny little breaks, you know, almost daily, or, you know, at least weekly, kind of those things that really just get you. And just kind of really pull at you and make you, you know, sometimes cry, but sometimes just think, oh gosh, like this is a hard business, you know, being a mother.
It is a hard business.
And so, and I think that that's sort of what I wanted to get at with that line. Yeah.
Yeah. That was such a great line. Another thing that Blythe does is she watches other women with their children and she kind of studies them to see what, you know, they might have that she feels like she's missing. And I definitely, I didn't relate to her with her feelings towards her daughter, thank God. But But I definitely understood this, and it wasn't necessarily with motherhood, but in terms of how I run my household, I will study other women and how they run their household just for like tips. And like, I've always feel like, well, they must be doing this better than me because I am not doing this right. Are you a studier of other women for certain things?
Yes, I'm right there with you. I totally. And I think that, you know, from the time that you are pregnant, I think that for me, it began as early as that, as sort of, you want to be your best, like you want to be the best mother you can. You want to, you know, give your kids the best experience you can. And, you know, most of us do, most of us feel that way. And so you can't help but kind of look around and think like, who's doing this better than me?
Yes.
How can I do what they're doing? it's that constant need of comparison. And there's so much comparison in motherhood. You know, it's almost like, you can't help it. It's just sort of part of how it works. And I think like that, that part of the book, Blythe definitely does that. And she's constantly comparing herself to other mothers. And, you know, there's a scene when she goes to lunch with some other moms who have babies around the same age as her. And, you know, she's having a tough day and she's in a tough spot at that point, feeling isolated and lonely. And like, she's, you know, really worried about her daughter and the connection she's not finding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's going to that lunch thinking like, okay, I'm going to meet with these other women and maybe, you know, one of them will show me a glimpse of how they're really feeling, or one of them will, and they don't, they talk about, you know, sleep schedules and baby gear and they keep it sort of very surface. And she's just like hoping that one of them will crack and show her something so that she doesn't feel so alone. And, you know, that's maybe a more like a, you know, on the other side of that, but it's still that idea of that comparison. Like what do these women have that I don't have? Like, how are they having this feeling and I'm not? And then the next question is like, why? Like, why aren't they, why are they having this experience that I'm not? So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of motherhood of kind of looking at others and then turning it inward, I think.
Yeah, along those same lines. I study other men. Of course, it's usually when I'm watching a basketball game as they're, you know, making the pass into the post.
Yeah, but, I don't know that fathers, they
not as reflective.
No, maybe with time we can, get you as neurotic as we are about stuff like that. With time. There's also like little things in here that I just loved, like Blythe noticing the leopard print gloves that the other woman wore, and they just jumped out at me. When you add details to your characters, do you have complete pictures of them in your head, like how they're going to dress, how they're going to fix their hair, where they shop? Sounds like you do.
I you know, it's funny, some writers do like a full character study before they write, and they'll do like, you know, they'll ask, you know, what's their astrological sign and, you know, right. Where do they shop and all that stuff. I don't do that, but I do have a vivid visual of them, I would say, and try to kind of bring that out. But I know, but it's funny because I, from the physical stuff, I feel like that is very much in my head. Like, I know what they look like and sort of the essence of them. But I often have to go back in revisions and add descriptions to how they look physically, because I feel like I miss that usually in my first couple drafts. And then sometimes, you know, readers, like early readers or editors, will say to me, like, we don't know what she looks like. I do have to kind of go back and pull that out sometimes. Yeah.
There's just like a ton of your writing was, it was hard for me to believe it was a first novel. Your writing was so it's like you've been doing it your whole life. And maybe you have been writing. Have you been writing this whole time?
Well, thank you for that. Well, I have been writing for a long time. This was my first book or first book that I tried to write, but I've always loved writing. I mean, if you had asked me what I wanted to be when I was a little girl, I would have said a writer. But just had always written on the side kind of thing of trying to, you know, have a full-time job. So I took a lot of, you know, night courses at the community college and that kind of thing. But I didn't like study writing or do an MFA or take creative writing stuff in college. I think I was at that point, I was really worried about making money and trying to have a career that felt like it could really happen. And
totally get it.
Felt like a pipe dream. Went into PR and kind of communications instead. But I think I've always felt like a writer, if that makes sense, and sort of had always hoped that I could do this one day, you know, full time. So I'm lucky for that.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on selling the TV and movie rights for it. And along those lines about visualizing the characters, did you visualize any certain actors or actresses in these roles?
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's an exciting part.
That is awesome. Yeah, really, congratulations. Yeah. That was really cool to see.
Mm-hmm. That's, one of those, like, you know, icing cherry on top kind of stuff where you just know you're incredible. But it's funny because a lot of people have asked me this, and I cannot put my finger on any actor or actress to play these parts. And I think it's because, to your point, like, it's so specific in my head, and I haven't found a right match yet.
Yeah.
But what I'm excited for is to hear from other people, like from other readers, about what they think, because that'll be fun for me just to hear who people think should play them. It'll be interesting to see what the producers do. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
For sure.
What kind of books were you reading growing up?
Oh, I don't know if this will resonate with you, but I read a lot of Babysitter's Club.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not with this guy, but with this
totally
guy.
Totally with him. He had the whole collection when he was 11. So
and that was supposed to be kept a secret. They edit that out too.
the Babysitter's Club and sort of Christopher Pike and R.L. Stein. And that was sort of, those were kind of the books that I was sort of reading when I was a teenager or kind of, you know, preteen.
Yeah.
I loved the idea of like collections I think kids at that time loved collecting books. And the idea that it was like a full series that you could kind of line your bookshelf with. So that was sort of, I loved that. And really, I remember just always wanting to read constantly growing up. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Besides just life in general, was there any other research that you did for this book?
I did do a bit of research sort of further along. I think once I sort of had a better idea of what the book was, I did some sort of more research on like attachment theories and motherhood and sort of looking into some, you know, psychology journals and that sort of stuff. There was one I found in particular that I love that's really stayed with me. It was in, I think it was the American Journal of Psychiatry from like 1975 or in the 70s. And the title of the article was called Ghosts in the Nursery.
Ooh.
I know, it's a chilling.
Wow.
That's a great title.
Chilling phrase, isn't it? Yeah. And that really stayed with me. I mean, that phrase says everything, of course.
It does.
The article was, the article was about, you know, how much we carry that we don't realize, you know, as mothers with our young children. And that concept is exactly what I was writing about, exactly what I was speaking to. So yeah, there was some interesting pieces I came across like that. And then I did, when I was further along and sort of had the book, pretty, you know, well, further down the road, I gave it to a psychiatrist who, she was actually a psychologist, and she specialized in trauma and had worked with a lot of mothers. And it was important for me to have her read that just from a sensitivity perspective and, you know, just making sure it all kind of hung together from a psychological perspective. So it was really good to have some of her feedback as well.
Yeah. Because I don't want to give anything away, but there is some grief that is dealt with in the book. And that was really hard to read, by the way. And it was also hard to look.
This is a great book.
I highly recommend this book. I would
going
say,
through the emotions.
If you are pregnant, or if you have maybe
alert.
Up until one, maybe just put it aside and come back to it.
Yeah.
Mine is 14, so I was fine. I was in the clear.
You're past it,
but it was still difficult. Was it hard for you to access this and then go be with your family after writing these themes and deep thoughts all day?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It wasn't as hard as it might seem like it should have been. And I think exploring these are all, you know, I was writing about things that obviously I hope I will never go through myself, and we all kind of hope we'll never go through ourselves, but there is something about sort of exploring it through writing that is sort of takes away the, you know, helps you to kind of navigate the fear about that. And so there, you know, that sort of therapeutic part of kind of working through it, I found, a little more therapeutic than kind of like difficult, just because they're fears and anxieties that we all have as mothers. I think probably to go back and read it now, I'd probably find it harder to read than I did to write. But there's something just exploratory when you're actually writing it that is, it felt more exploratory than
That's
anything.
Good.
So I didn't, and you know, I can't remember exactly when sort of I wrote the harder collection of scenes, but, I think I did have a bit of time and space from sort of, I wasn't exactly in the kind of the throes of that first year, I think, when I wrote some of those scenes.
That's good.
I think it's a good plan to make it harder for the reader than it was for the writer. So that's good. Your mindset on that one. Yeah. Take it easy on yourself. Make the reader work harder than the author, for God's sakes. All right, Ashley, listen, it is time now for our segment. We got quick six quick questions in which we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched and are binged and really enjoyed?
A show called The Undoing on HBO.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
it's based on a book, and I haven't read, usually I love to read the book first and then watch the show, but I hadn't read the book. It was great, like Nicole Kidman and some big actors. It was good. It was Hugh Grant. I couldn't actually binge it because they only released one episode every Sunday, but I watched it like, it was probably the only show in years I've watched like live as it aired at 9 p.m. on Sunday.
Oh, that's awesome.
So old school, yeah.
I've heard about that book.
If Hugh Grant is in it, I'm watching.
It's good. Very good. I highly recommend.
Cool. What is something that people often get wrong about you?
I think people will often say, oh, you're an extrovert. You're very social. I'm much more comfortable. I am an introvert. I am much more sort of fueled by time alone and, not socializing. I would probably, for the book launch, my publishers and friends and family were saying like, oh, it's, you know, we're in the middle of this pandemic and we can't have a launch party. And I'm so sorry. And I was like, thank God we're not.
Oh, wow.
Happy not to. So, yeah, that's probably something to get wrong about.
That's really funny. Yeah, I would have gotten that wrong probably. Because knowing your communications and publicist background. Yeah.
Makes
working
perfect.
In publicity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Most people make assumptions that you're, you know, sort of social and out there. But I
definitely would have assumed that. Yeah.
What is a movie you would not skip past while flipping through the channels?
Oh, I'm not a big movie person.
No, really?
No, I'm really not. I'm very into TV and probably
Yeah. How about a TV show you wouldn't skip past?
Yeah. Old reruns of Who's the Boss? What are you talking about here?
You know what? One of my favorite shows. Yeah. Step by Step. You remember Step by
Step? Yeah, I do remember Step by Step.
I can still hear the theme song. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was like, it used to be Friday Night TV, right?
Yeah.
That
used to TGIF, ABC.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, those are the days. But now, I really love the show The Affair. I don't know if you know that show. It was ran for maybe like five or six seasons, but I would probably just, I love the characters and I love the storytelling, so that would be one I would stop for.
Cool.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have many of these, but what is a book you'll never forget?
Oh, I really loved a book called The Deep End of the Ocean by Jacqueline Pichard. It came out, I was younger when it came, like a teenager, I think, when it came out, maybe early 20s. But it was, it actually was Oprah's first book club pick.
Oh, wow.
Wow, really?
You know what? Oprah's book club was like so, you know, used to be such a thing. So it was her first book club pick. And it was a dark book as well. It was about a little boy who goes missing and ends up being, you know, abducted, but kind of, but growing up in the same neighborhood as his family. And they, so sort of right underneath their nose the whole time and they don't know. And it was a dark book too. And as it has turned out, that book has always stayed with me. And as it turned out in like a lovely universe thing, the person, the editor who acquired that book way back then is the editor who acquired my book. Yeah, which is really wonderful. And I didn't know that until I was talking to her for, you know, our very first conversation. And she had mentioned, you know, that she started her career or something that way. And I was like, oh, my God, that book has just meant a lot to me for many years. So,
Cool.
How about this? Now, you've stated you're not an extrovert, but do you have a go-to karaoke song?
I've never done karaoke.
What? Come on, Ashley.
I've never done it. I can think of nothing. I can think of no greater nightmare for myself than doing karaoke or having to sing. So I don't even, I can't even answer that question. I'm getting nervous. I know.
You're getting stressed out. You're like, I'm kind of, is it hot in here?
I'm sorry. Let's move on.
Move on. Last question, and this might be an easier one. What book are you currently reading?
Oh, that is an easier one. Good. I just finished, like, literally two nights ago, Long Bright River by Liz Moore.
I love that book.
I just loved.
Beautiful.
I did an event with her last night, with her, which was such a treat. And I hadn't read, I've always wanted to read the book and I hadn't read it yet. I had a copy of it. I just hadn't dug in yet. And so I read it before the event with her and I loved it. Totally loved it. And Obama picked it as one of his favorite books.
I saw that.
Gotta read it.
I know. So
Laura, you were plugging that on the podcast.
I was plugging it and then Dave's like, oh, Obama picked this. And I was like, oh, of course. I know. You know, we have good taste.
Yeah.
All right, Ashley, speaking of good taste, we loved your book, The Push. Congratulations on all your success so far with it.
And Well deserved.
Thank you so much. Thank you. This was so much fun.
Thank you. Thanks, Ashley. We really enjoyed it.
Have fun with the rest of your day.
Yep. Thank you. You too. Okay, bye. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye. The Inside Club. All right, there you go. I enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to Ashley for hopping aboard, talking about her book. We enjoyed it. That is our show for today. I have another Inside Chat for you this week, as well as our book recommendation show on Wednesday. So look for that. Until then, my name is Dave Medicus. We'll see you.
Adios. And he took it like a man.